breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
WHYY and Billy Penn, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and Billy Penn. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, the Phillies take care of business against one of the worst teams in baseball, the Colorado Rockies, but we will take it. We had said at the last podcast, that this was a potential get-right week for the Phillies, and at least here in the first half of this six-game swing against two dregs of Major League Baseball, the Phillies do take care of business, sweeping the Rockies. The starting rotation had a phenomenal week. We'll talk about them, where they stand in terms of the rest of Major League Baseball, and the offense. The big hitters, the sluggers, starting to perhaps wake up as the weather gets a little bit warmer. So lots to talk about here on this edition of the podcast. I'm also going to be joined by former 94 WIP afternoon host John Marks, who knows his ball. We're going to talk about the Phils coming up in this three-game series against the Rockies. That's all on this edition of Hittin' Season. But just want to remind you guys, too, that if you want to participate in this podcast, we have a way for you to do that. We have a system where we want you guys to email us any voice memo questions or comments that you want to make. All you got to do is record something on your phone and send it over to hittinseason@billypenn.com. So you all have mobile phones. You've got these little handheld computerized devices. If you've got a voice memo recorder or whatever it is that Android people use, just hit record on your phone and email it to hittinseason@billypenn.com. And we'll play it on the show, provided that it's family friendly. So want to encourage you guys to do that so you can participate and be a part of Hittin' Season each and every week. Would love for you to do that. All right, let's talk about this series against the Rockies. Again, like I said, the Phillies did what they need to do. They swept the Rockies thanks to their 7-6 win on Wednesday night. Looked like it was going to be a really comfortable win on Wednesday night, up big after the offense exploded for four runs in the first inning. Just really a bizarre thing to see this Phillies offense this year have that much success early on. They've really struggled in the early innings, kind of getting their feet wet, but maybe the warmer weather, the baseball weather, is starting to take effect, and the big bats woke up. Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner, obviously going back-to-back to start the game, was a big deal. But we also saw Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto heat up in this game, too. So the Phillies sweep the Rockies. They are now 11-8 on the season. They appear to be starting to swing the bats well, and they continue to get incredible starting pitching. Now, the Phillies didn't get a whole lot of help in the National League East in terms of the Atlanta Braves, because the Braves have a four-game winning streak. They went into Houston and swept the woeful Houston Astros. My pick to represent the American League in the World Series, the Astros are out to a 6-14 start. Now, you've got to think that they're going to catch fire at some point, but they're 2.5 games behind the A's in the American League West. That's crazy. But the Phillies looking pretty good. The Mets are also on a little bit of a roll here in the National League East. They have won four in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10. It looked like they were going to start off the season in a death spiral, but they have really recovered and are playing decent baseball right now. So the Phillies need to keep on winning, and they are doing what we said they needed to do. We said at the beginning of the week on our Sunday night podcast that during these six games, these three against the Colorado Rockies, and now they're going to have three more coming up against the Chicago White Sox, who are 3-15. They're already 9 games out in the American League Central. It's a predictably disastrous season for the Chicago White Sox, but they're going to be coming into town for a three-game series on Friday. And we said against these two dregs, the Colorado Rockies, who are now 4-15, and the Chicago White Sox, who are 3-15, that the Phillies should win all six of these games. It really would be inexcusable for them to not win all six games. Now, the Phillies made it interesting on Monday and on Wednesday. They tried to give the game away on Monday by simply refusing to score, but they ended up pulling that one out in extra innings, 2-1 on the Christian Pache opposite field RBI single. They got a gem from Ranger Suarez on Tuesday in a 5-0 win, and then they got that big lead on Wednesday, and managed to hold off the Rockies. Gregory Soto tried to give it away with a meltdown inning in the eighth. The Rockies got five, but Phillies held on to win 7-6. The big story about this series is, of course, the starting rotation. Christopher Sanchez, Ranger Suarez, and Aaron Nola all delivered masterpieces this week against an admittedly bad Colorado offense. So you could say, was this the Phillies starting rotation shoving, or was this a byproduct of facing a really bad Colorado Rockies team? And I'll sit here and tell you, the Rockies are terrible. That is a bad offense. They scored one run in the first two games combined, and it looked like until the eighth inning, they had scored two runs in the entire series before Gregory Soto opened the door and essentially allowed the Rockies to get back in the game. But the Phillies' pitching was absolutely dominant in this series, especially the three starters. And as the Phillies now enter Thursday, they have an off day on Thursday before Chicago comes to town, the starting rotation has a 2.54 ERA. That is best in the National League, and it's third best in Major League Baseball. They behind only the Boston Red Sox, who have a 2.03 ERA from their starting rotation so far, and the Kansas City Royals with a 2.29 ERA in the early going. The Royals lead all of Major League Baseball in FWAR from their starting rotation, 2.6. The Red Sox are second at 2.4. And the Phillies are the only other team with a more than two wins above replacement from their starters at 2.3. So the Phillies starting rotation off to a phenomenal start here. Their 1.06 whip is best in the National League. Opponents are hitting just 207 against Philly starters. That is also the best in the National League. The Phillies also have the best strikeout to walk ratio and the best ground ball rate in the National League. On Wednesday night, it was Christopher Sanchez's turn to dazzle. Now, early in the season, he had been struggling with his command a little bit, few too many walks, but on Wednesday night, everything was working for him. He missed bats with all three of his pitches, his sinker, changeup, and slider. He got swinging strikes on all of those pitches. He struck out 10 Rockies hitters over six innings, gave up just one unearned run, and he threw 97 pitches in his six innings of work. 18 of them were swinging strikes. He got 18 swings and misses out of his 97 pitches, only allowed the one walk. And the one walk was the really big difference. In his first couple of starts, he had not given up a lot of runs, but he had allowed a lot of base runners. He had been walking a lot of guys, just hadn't been able to find his spots. But everything was working, especially that changeup to right-handers, diving out of the strike zone, and Rockies hitters were swinging over top of it all night long, but everything was working. The sinker and the slider, both effective pitches for Christopher Sanchez on Wednesday night. And he might be the unsung hero in this starting rotation. We all know what Christopher Sanchez, we all know what Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, and Ranger Suarez can do. We're going to talk about Ranger Suarez more in just a second as well. But Christopher Sanchez right now is not the number five starter in this rotation. He's the number four starter. And he is producing more like a mid-rotation starter than a number four starter. My concern with Christopher Sanchez was that last year was an aberration, that his surprising development as a starter wouldn't hold. It wouldn't take effect here in 2024, but it has. He's been very, even, I mean, listen, he hasn't been sharp in his first four, in his first few starts, but he's been effective enough to limit damage and keep the Phillies in games. He hasn't really been able to pitch deep like he did on Wednesday night, but on Wednesday night, he's started to figure it out. And again, the Phillies have played in a lot of bad weather here in the early going. This week, the Phillies played in some nice weather at Citizens Bank Park, and I think you saw the three best performances from each of those three starters so far this season, and I don't necessarily think that's a coincidence. So a phenomenal start from Christopher Sanchez against the Rockies on Wednesday night. Aaron Nola in the opener, 7 1/3 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 9 strikeouts, and 1 walk in the Phillies' 2-1 10-inning win. He, of course, didn't get the win because the Phillies were not able to score at all against the Colorado Rockies. It looked like they were going to blow that game. I'm going to talk more about that game in just a couple of minutes, but Aaron Nola looked dazzling in this game. His curveball was dancing all over the place. In his last start against the Cardinals, they were essentially playing in a driving rain for the first four innings or so, And the fastball velocity was 89, 90 miles an hour. And everybody admitted after the game that, you know, Nola himself said, I wasn't throwing as hard as I could because I wasn't sure of my plant foot. I didn't want my foot to slip. I didn't want to injure myself. I didn't want balls going to the backstop. And so he dialed it back, and he still gave them six innings in that last start. It was good to see him be able to dial it back and still be effective. But on Tuesday, he had everything working. He was throwing hard. The velocity was right where it needed to be. The pinpoint command, when he is dotting the corners like he can do with his stuff, he's unhittable. And this is why you sign him to the 7-year extension, because when he is on like that, or not the 7-year extension, the 7-year free agent contract, when he's on like that, he's unhittable. He is as dominant as anybody in baseball. And everything was working because he's hitting the corners with his fastball. Suddenly, the curveball dancing out of the strike zone is a pitch that hitters can't lay off. When Nola is not consistently hitting his spots, you can wait for him to come over the middle of the plate with a fastball and do damage on it. But in this game, he gave up just the one home run, and that was it. 9 strikeouts, 1 walk, pitched into the 8th inning. What more could you ask for from Aaron Nola? And then Ranger Suarez with the best pitching performance of the week, in a week filled with good pitching performances for the Phillies, a complete game, 7-hit shutout, the second complete game shutout of his career, and he just made it look so easy, especially through the first like 5 innings of that game. I think he was at over 50-some pitches through the first 5 innings. He just did it with such ease. He struck out 8. He got a career-high 18 swings and misses. He had hitters swing and miss on all of his pitches. Curveball, changeup, fastball, sinker, cutter. And as always, Ranger Suarez, who was robbed of a gold glove last season because he didn't have enough innings to qualify for the award, he will undoubtedly win the gold glove here in 2024. He had 4 comebackers at him, including the one that ended the game with 2 runners on and the Phillies holding that 5-0 lead. It was probably his last batter of the game. Got a ground ball right back to him, but he's just, with the way he finishes his delivery, to be that ready to field his position, and he's athletic, he's nimble, and he throws strikes to first base. He's cool and calm. Every time he gets a ball hit back at him, he is a joy to watch field his position, which you don't say very often about a pitcher. But you're just hoping that he gets balls hit back at him because he's so much fun to watch field his position from the pitcher's mound. He gobbles everything up there, and he did it 4 times in the game on Tuesday. Just a masterclass performance by a guy who does not throw 96 miles an hour. He's old school. He relies on confusing hitters. He relies on having a number of different pitches that he can spot locations. And his fastball is 92, 93 miles an hour. So if hitters are waiting on his curveball, on his changeup, he's going to sneak that fastball right by you. And those sinkers and cutters are always moving. So hitters never know whether to look on the outer half of the plate, the inner half of the plate, up, down. He changes eye level. He moves guys in and out, left-handers, right-handers. It was just a phenomenal performance by Ranger Suarez. And he has been doing this since coming to Clearwater back in February. He has not allowed a run in 18 straight innings here in the majors. But remember, he got off to that scoreless inning streak in spring training too. Like, just, he's been dialed in since he came to spring training. Here in the regular season, 3-0 on the season with a 1.73 ERA. That is, I think Todd Zielecki noted that is the lowest ERA by a Phillies left-hander through 4 starts to start the season since Steve Carlton in 1983, when lefty had a 1.69 ERA. JT Realmuto noted that one of the biggest reasons he thinks that Suarez has been so dialed in at this point is because he, unlike previous seasons, was there in spring training. He got his visa issues because he's in Venezuela in the offseason. He got his visa issues out of the way early. So there was no delay to the start of his spring training because he had trouble getting into the country. He got that all taken care of early. In 2021 and 2022, he had visa issues. So his spring training got started later, and it put him behind for the start of the regular season. Not so this year. And then last year, he got hurt in the World Baseball Classic. So he missed the start of the season and then struggled once he first got going, because that essentially was his spring training. But this spring, he was in camp on time. and he was in health. He was in camp healthy. His shutout on Tuesday night was the second of the season in Major League Baseball. Of course, Ronel Blanco's no-hitter on April 2nd was the first, and it was the Phillies' first shutout since Michael Lorenzen's memorable no-hitter against the Nationals back in August of last year. He joins Cole Hamels and Cliff Lee as the only Phillies left-handers to throw multiple shutouts at Citizens Bank Park. Bryce Harper called him the best number three in the game. And I think you can argue when he is on his game, he is essentially a third ace. He's the lefty ace of this team. Going back to the start of 2021, we're talking about 67 starts here for Ranger Suarez. He has a 3.10 ERA. He is already one of the best left-handed starters in the National League and in all of baseball. He may be the most underrated starter in all of baseball. And when you factor in how clutch he has been in the playoffs, he's been one of the best postseason pitchers in recent baseball history. Just overall, Ranger Suarez is going to get a big money deal from this baseball team. He's going to get a contract extension. He's a homegrown talent. He's a guy that this team has developed over years. They have seen him go from a guy they thought would just be a bullpen guy to one of the more reliable starters in Major League Baseball, a guy who you can count on in game three of a playoff series to give you not just competent innings, but dominant baseball. You can call him out of the bullpen if you need to close out a National League Championship Series and get you to the World Series. He is versatile. He offers you a different look than Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola. He complements those guys so incredibly well. He's going to get a big money deal from this team at some point, and you're going to have Nola, Wheeler, and Suarez locked in for a good long time. And Christopher Sanchez is showing you that he can certainly be counted among that group as well, potentially. I think you need to wait and see a little bit more with Christopher Sanchez. But I'll tell you, the way that this starting rotation has started out the season is exceedingly encouraging, especially given the struggles that the offense has had. They have needed this starting rotation to carry them. But it's why you feel better about this team if you've got to pick something. And I said this before on a podcast. If you're going to pick something to struggle with early on, you'd rather it be the bats than the starting rotation. Because the bats will come around. But if you've got starting pitching issues, that can hamper you all season long. And you can win low-scoring games like they did on Monday when Aaron Nola pitches into the eighth inning and you just need that one big hit late. It's frustrating to watch as a fan, but the starting rotation being as dominant as they are is what allowed this team to get out to an 11-8 start. And it's what has allowed them to sweep this Colorado Rockies team here on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Now, I don't want to also bury what the bats did, because in the games on Tuesday and Wednesday, the Phillies offense obviously has come around. And again, I think the better weather is going to help, but really, this team just needed to kind of get going, and this stuff snowballs, right? We've seen offenses when they start to swing the bats, things can snowball in a positive way. And maybe we're starting to see that now. JT Realmuto's first inning home run on Tuesday, maybe that broke the seal a little bit. The 2-run home run gave the Phillies an early lead. Starting pitchers have just not had early leads to work with, and it makes a difference. When you're a starter and you get a first inning lead, it lets you breathe a little bit. Now, you can't then go up in the second inning and give up a bunch of runs, but the Phillies starters, generally speaking, haven't done that so far this year. So Realmuto gets the team off to a good start with a 2-run first inning home run on Tuesday night. And then Bryce Harper hit his 4th home run of the year, but the first home run he'd hit since his 3 home run game in the first week of the season. So Harper hit 2 balls in this game, over 100 miles an hour for extra base hits. Maybe he is ready to break out of his early season funk. And Harper had been hitting the ball hard when he'd been making contact, but just hitting a lot of balls on the ground. He'd been doing that all spring, too. Getting some balls in the air, maybe starting to help him break out of this funk that he has been in early in the season. And then on Wednesday night, Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner began the homer barrage with back-to-back home runs in the first inning. to give Christopher Sanchez a 2-1 lead. And then the Phillies started tacking on. Alec Bohm had an extra base hit. Brandon Marsh gets an RBI single. You just see these guys continue to pile on, and they scored 4 first inning runs. Again, totally jarring for this offense to score 4 runs in the first inning, but beautiful thing to see and give Christopher Sanchez that early lead. Kyle Schwarber then hit his 2nd home run in the 6th inning to give the Phillies a 7-1 lead, and they would need all 7 of those runs. Now, Trey Turner has been red hot. I had given him a bit of a hard time early in the season, the first week and a half, 2 weeks of the season. He'd gotten some hits, but had been striking out in big spots. He was frustrated. No extra base hits from Trey Turner for a little while there. At least very few, but he has been red hot over the course of his last 10 games, hitting .425, 4 doubles, 2 home runs. He was 3-for-5 on Wednesday night. He has a very Trey Turner-esque slash line right now. .329 batting average, .386 on base percentage, a .487 slugging percentage on the season now. Trey Turner giving you that production out of the 2-hole that you were hoping to see. Thankfully, It looks like we're going to avoid the ridiculously awful Trey Turner start that I think some of us were getting a little bit worried we were going to see again after the rough first 10 games of the season, or the first 7 games of the season, 6 games of the season. But over his last 10 games now, Trey Turner starting to add some of the power into his offensive performance and becoming an impact player at the top of the lineup. And good to see Kyle Schwarber not wait until June to start slugging balls out of the ballpark. I still would love to see Kyle Schwarber in the number 4 spot. I would love to see maybe Brandon Marsh moved up into the leadoff spot. If you wanted to give Bryce Harper a little bit more protection, I know they wouldn't go lefty-lefty with Harper and Schwarber in the 3 and the 4 spot. But what if you put Brandon Marsh in the 1 hole? You put, you keep Trey Turner in the 2 hole, Bryce Harper 3. I guess maybe you keep Real Muto at 4 and Kyle Schwarber at 5. You could do that, right? I mean, would that be crazy? It's probably not worth changing things around right now, but I just would love to see Harper get... If Real Muto continues to hit the way he's hitting, I guess you can leave things the way they are. But I just worry that there's not quite enough protection for Bryce Harper in the lineup with Kyle Schwarber hitting in the leadoff spot. But Kyle Schwarber likes hitting there, and those leadoff home runs, they definitely do give the team a jolt. But even Johan Rojas is starting to figure things out, looks like. He walked, he stole a base, hit a double off the wall, an opposite field single on Wednesday night after walking and laying down a perfect bunt on Tuesday. Johan Rojas taking better swings, better plate appearances here in the last few games. So maybe he's starting to figure it out a little bit. I think as the weather gets warmer, the offense is going to start to figure it out. And certainly you cannot discount the fact that the Colorado Rockies do not have good pitching. But that's what you got to do. You got to take advantage of the bad starting rotation, the bad bullpen that the Rockies have, and they have to continue to do that against the White Sox here during the course of the weekend. Now, we did see a Gregory Soto meltdown. If you're looking at a little bit of a black cloud, the unreliability of Gregory Soto continues to be a problem, and Sir Anthony Dominguez continues to give up home runs and strike guys out. Sir Anthony Dominguez just has been a mystifying reliever here in the early going. But Gregory Soto, man, I was really hoping that we would see a bounce back season from him. He's just not reliable. But that's why Rob Thompson used him up 6, right? That's the time to use Gregory Soto. Up 6, you have some leeway. He clearly didn't want to go to other pitchers. He kept thinking Gregory Soto was going to get out of it, and he just couldn't. 5 of the 6 batters he faced all reached base. Jeff Hoffman came in and gave up a couple of inherited runners, but managed to escape that inning with the 1-run lead, and then Jose Alvarado closed things out. For all the talk about how Rob Thompson uses his bullpen and how it's kind of, you know, mix and match, Jose Alvarado is his closer. I think we've seen enough to understand that Jose Alvarado is Rob Thompson's most trusted reliever, and he's going to use him to close out games. We have seen that, and I think that's borne out by the fact that he closed out this game here, a 1-run game. He closed it out on Wednesday night. He's the closer. And maybe he gets some 8th innings here and there against, if like 2, 3, 4 is coming up. Especially against teams like the Braves or the Dodgers or you know, good offenses like the Padres, you might see Alvarado in the eighth inning then in that case, or if there's a couple of really tough lefties, you might use Alvarado there. But Alvarado is the closer. He's this team's best reliever. And he allowed a runner to get to second base on Wednesday night on a single and a steal with two outs, but ended up getting the job done. And the Phillies closed out the game on Wednesday night with Alvarado on the hill. He is this team's closer. And there's some shakiness a little bit in a couple of spots here in the bullpen. But overall, I think we're seeing this bullpen, despite a high ERA and by some guys, and it's going to affect the overall numbers of the bullpen. It's still a very, very good bullpen. Still a very, very good bullpen. One of the better bullpens in baseball, if not one of the top five bullpens in baseball. And for the most part, again, you have these innings like Gregory Soto's. Put those aside. It's a good group. It's a good group, and they're more often than not going to get the job done. The Phillies take three in a row from the Colorado Rockies. They absolutely had to do it, and they've got to continue that moving on this weekend against the Chicago White Sox. And joining me to talk about this Phil's sweep of the Rockies, a get-right series for the Phils. And hey, we got another one of those potential get-right series coming up this weekend against, if you can believe it, an even worse team in the White Sox. But let's focus on the beating of the Rockies here at the beginning of the week. John Marks, you know the name from 94WIP. John was the afternoon host for a number of years. He has moved on. He has a weekly Philly show right now for Bet Parks Casino. New episodes are out every Wednesday. And if you want to know everything John's got going on, he's got his hands in a lot of cookie jars at John Marks Media. John, thanks for coming back on Hitting Season. How are you?
You got it, man. I don't think I've ever actually been on Hitting Season. I was a Felsky File guy.
I was wondering about that. Yeah, yes. It's been a while. I wasn't sure if we had the name change at that point or not.
Yeah, now listen, you know me, and you know, I grew up, I was an 80s Phillies fan, and the bad players and bad managers of the Phillies in the 80s is really what's made me the Phillies fan that I am today. So I always appreciated you and the John Felsky connection that we had.
Yeah, there were some reasons I had to change it. I always loved that. Yeah. I always loved the name of that show. John Felsky gets a bad rap in this town. I saw somebody tweet something about, what was the worst Phillies manager of your lifetime? There's a picture of Ryan Sandberg there, and I thought that's a good inclusion. And somebody deigned to mention Lee Ilya, John Felsky, and Nick Leyva. And I said, you better keep John Felsky out of your mouth. I'm not gonna stand for it.
Yeah, you got to go Nick Leyva over John Felsky. And by the way, who's winning? Whitey Herzog, rest in peace, who just passed away. He's not winning with Steve Jeltz and all the other stuff that they had. Don Carmen, all the other players
Don Carmen had in
the 80s.
Oh, that was fantastic. Those were good teams. Gary Reedus, I remember having Gary my Reedus. Hopes pinned on Gary Reedus, and it just didn't work out. Well, anyway, we've got a good baseball team right now, John. It was a frustrating first few weeks. The first game of this series against the Rockies was absolutely frustrating, but the offense broke out here on Tuesday and Wednesday, especially on Wednesday, but some of the bigger bats are starting to get things moving. But I want to start off talking about the starting pitching. In this series against, again, the Rockies are not the best offensive team in the world, but what really it's been since opening day, these starters have all shoved. This week in particular, you had Aaron Nola on Monday. You had Ranger Suarez on Tuesday with the complete game shutout. Christopher Sanchez on Wednesday, generating tons of swing and miss. The entire starting rotation has been lights out. What is your take on what is making this rotation so good right now? Why are they doing this? How are they doing this?
Man, I mean, I think some of it is just the nature of baseball in April, where weather's not necessarily conducive to balls flying out of the park. It's been wet. It's been a little bit cold. But, I mean, when you really look at it, objectively, they have the best rotation 1 through 5 in the National League. And, I mean, I guess I got caught talking about how I didn't – when I looked at the Phillies rotation, I almost fast-forward to the playoffs, and I said, I just don't know if Aaron Nola is a good enough number two that's going to get you to a World Series. But, I mean, 1 through 5, and we'll see what happens with – Turnbull and if Taiwan Walker's coming back or whatever. But, you know, Ranger Suarez gives you an idea. And if you look at him and where he is in his career, he's probably right now entering his prime. Yeah. He really knows how to pitch. His stuff is good. When he's got pinpoint control, he's very difficult to beat. So maybe this number two starter that we're looking for really is Ranger Suarez. So I was like, all right, you got a one, you got two threes, and then you got a four and a five. Well, maybe you do have a one, two, three, four, and five. And they complement each other. Wheeler's got the dynamite stuff. Ranger's kind of the big pitch guy that you have a lot of confidence in the playoffs. And Noel takes the ball every 5 days, and that is so important to you. You know, at least he's given you five or six innings, even if he's given up a lot of home runs or he doesn't necessarily have his command. So I think top to bottom, this is each starter complements themselves. And as long as you have Wheeler at the top of the rotation and he's healthy and he's pitching well, this is going to be a difficult team to beat.
And it's kind of a throwback rotation a little bit too. Zach Wheeler throws hard, but he's not throwing 97, 98, 99 like some of the other pitchers who most of them are undergoing elbow surgery right now. I mean, he still throws hard, but he's really learned to mix in breaking pitches. He develops a new pitch every year, it seems, and is really working all that stuff in. But Aaron Nola is not a high velocity guy. He relies on movement and command. He relies on that curveball to get a lot of swing and miss. Ranger Suarez is the same way. Definitely not a high velocity guy. 92, 93 miles an hour on his fastball, but he's all about command, pinpoint control, hitting his spots. Christopher Sanchez used to be a high velocity guy, tried to throw 95, 96 every time. They said to him, dial it down, get your command together. And ever since he did that last year, he's been one of the most underrated pitchers in the entire National League. If you look at the stats last year into this year, he just goes out there every fifth day, and very rarely do you see him blow up. And most of the time, he's pitching real, real well. So it's kind of a throwback rotation in that there's not a bunch of blazers. They save those for the bullpen, but in the rotation, they really want these guys to throw 80, 90, 100 pitches and get deep into games. And so far this year, they've been doing an amazing job of that.
Yeah, and Sanchez, I was curious to see if he was going to bounce back. He hadn't looked great in his first couple starts. More walks than you'd like to see. But to your point, John, that changeup, And even though he's not throwing, like you said, the high velocity, the changeup keeps hitters off balance, especially those right-handed hitters that want to sit on the changeup. So he has great stuff. And again, you look at Dave Dombrowski, and you know he's had some misses along the way. Taijuan Walker, God, I'd like to have that one back.
Yeah.
But he certainly knows how to put together a rotation, and it's pretty nice when you have the pieces that are already here. And you mentioned Zach Wheeler, and I know he just got the big extension, but I mean, he's one of the best free agent signings in the history of the city in any sport. How good he's been. He's been healthy. He has, and it's a great point, and I don't think it's talked about enough. He's continued to develop. The velocity's down a little bit this year. We'll see where that goes over the course of the season. He's down a tick or two. That's going to happen when you're pitching almost, you know, you're pitching as many innings as anybody else in Major League Baseball. And you've seen him tire out in previous years, but he's continued to develop in his 30s, which is amazing. This is a really good team. As long as they stay moderately healthy, they're going to win enough games to get to the playoffs. And then it's going to be, all right, well, like, what are the matchups and can they kind of do this again? But for the first time, John, I've actually looked at this and I said, you know what? With Spencer Strider going down, maybe they can win enough regular season games to be a factor in the division. Because I didn't feel like that before.
Well, if you figure who they're going to get to replace Spencer Strider in the rotation, it's going to probably be, you know, a quad A, one of their quad A pitchers. Maybe they have a pitcher who can be like a one and a half win player or something like that. Right. Spencer Strider is like a 7-win pitcher. I mean, you're talking conceivably Spencer Strider not being in the rotation for a full season. You might be able to knock 6 wins off of the Atlanta win total. So now maybe you're talking about 92, 93 wins get you the National League East. That's doable for this team that won 90 games last year. And, you know, you have this rotation, you have this bullpen that's healthy from the start and looks like they're getting off to a good start. My question to you is, what would you do with Taijuan Walker now? It looks like he's ready to come back. Spencer Turnbull has been very solid in the number five spot. I like him in that spot right now. I think they've got a really good thing going. And I don't really know what you do with Spencer Turnbull if you take him out of the rotation. I suppose you could make him a long man, but then if you need him to be a starter again, you got to build those innings up. I don't know how many innings he has in his arm this year anyway, given all the time he's missed and the fact he didn't pitch a lot last year. So maybe there's only 120 innings in his arm this year anyway. I'm just curious, what would you do?
It's not easy. And the first thing I do is slow play Taijuan Walker coming back. Because it's not like he's looked great in his rehab starts, which really no surprise. Look, he's walking a lot of guys. All right, that's Tylan Walker. So I would slow play it as long as I could and see what Turnbull has for another start or two. I'm not even sure how long you can keep Walker down with the rehab starts. But it's a really difficult decision because money talks and BS walks. And the fact that the guy's making, I believe, $17 million a year, the second year of a four-year contract, it's difficult not to put him in the rotation based on how much money he makes. Because he's not going to be – he was unhappy being out of the playoff rotation last year. So much so, he let his feelings be known, right?
Yeah.
So the last thing you want is a player that you're going to – a pitcher you bring in, you're going to make him the long man. He can't pitch out of the bullpen. So you almost have to put him in the starting rotation. Do you go with a six-man rotation, right? Like Wheeler's down a little bit. I don't think Wheeler likes pitching with that extra day. So,
yeah.
Your question is, I don't know. I don't know because I feel like you have to put Walker in the starting rotation unless if Turnbull comes out and has a dynamite start and he looks really good. And then now you're like, all right, well, Tylan Walker, you have to bring him up. What are you going to do with him? I mean, what do you do with him? I don't know. It's going to be a difficult situation. I'm sure the Phillies are hoping that it's going to work itself out on its own, but it may not.
Yeah, I mean, you probably have to put. You can't send Turnbull to AAA. I don't think that the option exists to do that with him. And so you probably send down somebody like Ricardo Pinto, and you probably put him in the bullpen, and he's your long man. That's what they signed him for to begin with, anyway. I mean, so it's not as if he was guaranteed a spot in the starting rotation, and you're taking something away from him, but. With Tywan Walker, he's going to have a very short leash. There's no doubt about it. And if the velocity stays down, he gets hit around, his walk rate is too high. You don't want to let that decision linger for too long and let Spencer Turnbull, who has gotten stretched out, all of a sudden now not be able to pitch as much. But again, I wonder how many innings are on his arm, how much the Phillies would feel comfortable with him, given the fact he had Tommy John and missed a lot of last year. I think he only pitched like 60 or 70 innings last year. So there could be a durability issue with Turnbull that they're cautious about anyway. Let's talk a little bit about the offense, because in the last two games of this series, we've been wanting this team to slug the baseball a little bit, John. They finally got around to doing it. Kyle Schwarber hits two home runs, including the 250th of his career here on Wednesday. Trey Turner went yard. They went back-to-back in the first inning. Bryce Harper hit a bomb in the game on Tuesday. Same with JT Realmuto. So these big-name bats, these guys in the top of the lineup, the 1-2-3-4 guys, had a good couple of games here against some Colorado pitching that you really were you would expect them to do well, and they did, which is great. Meet the expectations? Awesome. So do you feel a whole lot better about this offense after these two games? Is this more these guys coming out of it, or is this more a Colorado pitching staff that is really one of the worst in baseball?
Well, I mean, I think, and I was talking about this today on the Bet Parks Philly show, that I think it's a combination of – like it's hitting season, right? That's the name of your show.
You're getting there, yeah.
Hey, listen, when it's 40 degrees and it's raining out, it's 45 degrees, and you got a guy throwing 98 miles an hour. You don't want to be out there it doesn't feel good when you're getting cuts off of those guys. So I think it's a combination of that, and these are bona fide hitters. These are veteran hitters. It's only a matter of time before they came back, and I think they also all got cold at the same time. Schwarber, he's not even June yet. Schwarber, two home runs in the final game of the series. Trey Turner now is hitting well over 300. Bryce Harper's getting going, like you mentioned. You know, the one guy, I mean, even Rojas had two hits at the
He's coming game. Around.
He's coming around a little bit, so it's like encouraging. Pache's also looked good behind him. Kind of as a you can mix and match if you want to, even though they're both right-handed bats. Brandon Marsh has been very good, but the only negative in the lineup is Nick Castellanos, who is so friggin' streaky. I don't know if you saw the video the other night of he checked swing. The ball was 6 feet outside, like literally 6 feet outside, and he was swinging. And when Nick Castellanos gets in these funks, he must be. Like, while the ball is being pitched, he must be like, do I swing, don't I swing? Do I swing, don't I swing? Yeah. He's got no plan at the plate. He's in his head. He's got no clue. But when he's on, he's on. So it's encouraging that they got going during this series. And sure, some of it's got to be Colorado. They're not a very good team. They have four wins. White Sox are coming in, so you hope you get it going more. But guess what? Look at the schedule, John. They're going to be playing a lot of bad teams over the course of the season, so you got to beat the bad teams, and the Phillies have done a very good job of doing that recently.
Yeah, when we were doing the podcast on Sunday night, we essentially said, like, if you're a really good team, you got to win all six of these games. I mean, you could say five or six because a fluky thing can happen in one of the games that you can't do anything about. But, you know, these teams, the Rockies are terrible. The White Sox are terrible. Like, yeah. These are teams you got to make hay, because in August and September, you're playing more road games than home games and the schedule gets tougher. Like, this was a get right week, if ever there was a get right week for a baseball team. And the Phillies have taken advantage so far of this softer part of their schedule. Going back to the National Series. I think they're now something like they're probably 9-4 over this 13 game stretch. So, you know, I think that's about what you would expect from these guys. And to your point on Nick Castellanos, I think I look back at his numbers from Cincinnati and Detroit, and he was a much more consistent player before coming to Philadelphia. I mean, every season with an OPS well over 800, a batting average, on-base percentage, slugging percentage, just a consistent offensive player. And he's just not been that here. And I think you're right. I think he is a guy, I think, who lives inside his own head, maybe more than any other player on the team. I guess there's... Is there a point, does there come a point when, with Nick Castellanos, the Phillies decide we need to cut bait and figure out how we do that? I mean, he's got a big contract. There's no obvious replacement right now for him. But if the rest of the guys are hitting, I guess you can live with it. But he's not even close. He still doesn't have an extra base hit this year. I mean, it's wild how he gets into these funks, and it just doesn't seem like he's ever going to pull out of it. I just don't know how many more times we can go through it.
Yeah, it's if you remember in the offseason, there was a couple week stretch where they were trying to move him. Yeah. And then, of course, as every good GM or PR department would do, then they came out with, oh, no, we love Nick Castellanos. He's our right fielder. What do you mean? We never said we didn't want him. They would love to move off the contract. The problem is, what team is going to take on his salary and going forward? It's not like he's in the final year of a contract. You might be able to at some point find a match. That feels like an offseason type move where maybe you're trading, let's trade our problem for your problem. And because I think he can still be a productive player. Here's the other problem, and it's I look at Taiwan Walker the same way, and being in sports radio and the media in Philly for as long as I was, it's not an easy place to play for certain guys. And Castellanos, he's odd. I like him, but he's odd. Like I still don't know what makes him tick. From his first press conference he did in Philly to the interviews that he does with John Clark or the weird stuff that he did. Like, he's a really, really odd guy. I think he's a good guy, but he's just an odd guy. And this is not an easy place to play. Philly's not an easy place to play. And same thing with Taiwan Walker. It's almost like that we're waiting for them to fail so we can pounce. You know what I mean? Like, Taiwan Walker, we know that he's sucked and he hasn't lived up to his contract. And we're ready to pounce. And, like, I don't know if he's equipped to handle that. And so far, Castellanos he's worked his way out of funks. But at some point, I wonder if you get to that point of no return where it's like, he ain't coming back. Because there's no standing ovation for Nick Castellanos that's gonna fix him like Trey Turner. In fact, it might make it worse. I don't know how we would react if everybody gave him a standing ovation. Like, you're just, and to your point, there's no obvious replacement. So I think you're going to have to live and die with what he gives you this year, and then in the offseason, Dombrowski's going to try to move him again.
And the hot streak will come, I think, of course, with Castellanos. How long it lasts, we're not sure, but you could see in the playoffs, they don't win that Atlanta series without him in the lineup hitting all those home runs. And the thing that's frustrating about Castellanos is I still remember his comment after the NLCS, where he said essentially, like, after game two, I was seeing the ball better than I'd ever seen it before. And somewhere along on the flight to Arizona, I lost the ability to see the ball, which it boggles my mind that an athlete, a professional baseball player, can see a ball so well for that stretch of time, and then in the blink of an eye,
like that,
He just, I can't see it at this point. So I think the one game winning hit that he had over the weekend, the game against the Pirates that they came back to win, he said that was the first time he'd gone to the plate all year without an approach. Like, he just wanted to see the ball and hit it. So I don't know. I mean, I get they came into this season wanting to reduce the chase rate, not swing and miss as much. Do you think that fouled them up early in the season? And maybe they're trying to just get back to doing what they do?
Sure, it did. And you know what I think Castellanos did that night? I think he guessed right. When you're out there guessing, late in Ryan Howard's career, he was guessing. And when he guessed fastball and you left enough of the plate, that's how he hit 30 home runs, even when he really wasn't a good hitter anymore. It's crazy to think, and I'll never forget, and this is something that'll stay with me forever. We were talking about historical numbers that this team was putting up flying to Arizona. If you think of the stretch that Castellanos and Trey Turner and Bryce Harper and Schwarber, it was like, oh my God. Like, and when you live and die with the long ball, like the Phillies were doing at that point, and then Arizona says, you know what? We're not going to pitch them like that. We're not going to pitch them the same. And they chased everything. They changed their approach. They made adjustments. The Phillies had no adjustment. So to your original question, how do you think the rest of the majors are going to try to pitch the Phillies this year? They're not going to give them as many fastballs to hit. So yeah, I think it's natural to kind of still remember what happened last year, and maybe it's still be affecting you in your head and you're still up there. Like, Nick Castellanos is, when he's like this, I don't see any plan at the plate. I see him going up there and just swinging the bat and being totally clueless, and that's where he is right now.
It's like he decides before the pitchers even release the ball, I'm swinging. I think I'm going to get a strike, so I'm swinging. It's just
totally
not how it works normally. Let's finish up talking about the bullpen just a little bit. It got a little hairy here on Wednesday night. Gregory Soto came in protecting a 6-run lead, and largely because of him, the Phillies gave up 5 runs in the 8th inning to make it a little bit of a nail biter. Jose Alvarado came in to get the save in the 9th inning, a pretty easy save for him, and they got the winning run to second base, but there was really no danger at that point. But it was pretty white knuckle time there in the 8th inning before Jeff Hoffman allowed a couple of inherited runners to score, but he managed to kind of put out the fire. I don't know. Gregory Soto has the kind of stuff to be a closer. He has saved games in the past. He has had 2 seasons of over 30 saves when he was with the Tigers. He's made all-star teams, and his stuff is electric. I don't get it. And I don't think the Phillies trust him in a big spot, but they kind of have to use him. But you would think a 7-1 lead, that's
safe.
The spot.
Yeah.
That's the spot. And it almost blew up in their face.
Yeah, Soto's interesting. I've had conversations about, you know, relievers can be so year to year. I remember Pat Gillick used to talk about this. He didn't like giving multi-year contracts to relievers because they can be one of the best in the game 1 year, and then you're designating them for assignment the following year because they're like kickers. They just lose their stuff, right? Soto has the stuff. It's not often that you get 2 lefties that are throwing 100 miles an hour out of the bullpen. I mean, I thought about maybe like more defining roles, because really when you look at the Phillies, it to me it feels like they want Hoffman to be the guy, a combination of Hoffman and Alvarado, because they don't trust Soto. I don't trust Soto going out there, but you would think that maybe, like, in a perfect world, you have Soto as a 7th or an 8th inning guy. You have Alvarado, who you can use 7th inning, 8th inning, 9th inning. Hoffman feels like your best bet to be your right-handed closer if you're going to use them. But he hasn't been consistent from Soto has not been consistent from the minute that he got here. And, you know, he's going to have to really get more consistent before they're going to do it. Because, I mean, who's going to want to put him out there in a high leverage situation? His ERA is almost 10 now.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's the 5 runs that he gave up on Wednesday night, but still. So, like, just like I said earlier, I think, especially with the bullpen, it takes time to figure itself out on its own. But Soto, to me, doesn't feel like a back-end guy again this year.
Yeah, the bullpen numbers don't look great in terms of ERA, but I think you look at this bullpen, you look at how they pitch most of the time, it's a really good bullpen, but there's still these flare-ups, but luckily the offense for a change was able to carry the day. Some early runs against Colorado on Wednesday, and then another Kyle Schwarber home run to kind of ice it late in the game. They got close, but the Phillies managed to pull off the sweep of the Rockies, and now the White Sox, who have still just two wins on the season, come into town for a three-game series on Friday night. John Marks, make sure you catch all of his stuff. Just follow him on the socials, and that's how you find where he is and what he's doing at John Marks Media. Catch his weekly Philly show for Bet Parks Casino. Again, new episodes out every Wednesday, so make sure you listen to John there, and keep an eye out for anything else John's got going on. John, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season, formerly the Felsky Files, now first time on the new branding of Hittin' Season these many years later.
My pleasure, John. Great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, so here's how things are looking for the weekend as the White Sox come to town. A good matchup on Friday night. Garrett Crochet will go up against Spencer Turnbull. Turnbull with a 1.80 ERA through his first three starts. 16 strikeouts for Spencer Turnbull through his first three starts. Crochet 1-2 with a 3.57 ERA. He has 31 strikeouts to start the season. He's a left-hander, so he could give the Phillies a little bit of trouble. Might be a tough matchup for the Phillies bats, but they absolutely should sweep this series. That's going to be the matchup on Friday. On Saturday, you have an evening game, 6:05 start time. Michael Soroka, who's off to a terrible start, 0-2 with a 6.98 ERA, former Braves young up-and-comer. Now with the White Sox, he goes up against Zach Wheeler. Philly's going to try and win their first Zach Wheeler start of the season on Saturday night. I think it happens on Saturday night, gang. They're not going to go 0-5 in his first five starts. Are they against Chicago White Sox? No, not happening. I'm guaranteeing a win on Saturday night, guys. Zach Wheeler is going to beat the White Sox. And then on Sunday afternoon, they finish things up with Nick Nestrini, right-handed pitcher, 3.60 ERA. He'll be going up against Aaron Nola, who is 2-1 with a 3.47 ERA on the season so far. So that's your pitching matchups for this weekend as the Phillies bring on the woeful Chicago White Sox to Citizens Bank Park. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to John Marks once again for joining me here on the podcast. Justin and Liz will have a end of week podcast coming up for you on Friday, so make sure you check that out. Go to BillyPenn.com. That's where you can find, that is our home for Hittin' Season, BillyPenn.com/Hittin' Season. Check out Billy Penn's socials as well, Instagram, you can check out the Hittin' Season YouTube page where we have videos of our podcasts and guest segments and all that other kind of stuff. You can go there, subscribe to the Hittin' Season YouTube page, BillyPenn.com/Hittin' Season, bookmark that page, and you can follow us at all those different places so you can get the latest on everything we're doing here at Hittin' Season. Thanks, guys, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.